Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
Well, folks just didn't hear that, but I had to clear my throat before I started this podcast, which isn't a good way to start, but we are started here on the Rookie Sports Report podcast. We're, of course, presented by ESPN The Jock, Matthew Rizzo alongside Logan Weber, and didn't podcast the past 2 days. Didn't do it on Tuesday because we were hosting Sports Talk, which I thought we, humble brag here, absolutely killed it.
Agreed.
Had a great show, a lot of callers, a lot of intake. And Wednesday I had, or no, we didn't have other commitments, but there was a scheduling conflict between us and the Springfield Cardinals playing. They were playing at a time where we usually record. We record at around 11:30 noonish, and they were set to start at noon. So,
to be honest, the Springfield Cardinals may not be a bad idea to have matinees more often. These noon first pitch games, because they performed pretty well. In that game, it was an absolute blowout. And this is a Springfield Cardinals team that's struggled pretty much all year. And they won yesterday 9-3 in that 12:05 start. So it was an 11:50 pregame. So Sports Reporters gets over at 11. 50 minutes is kind of a short time frame. Yeah, for us to get a podcast in, especially Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's really hard with... We talk about what we're going to talk about, and then we do our extra segments, our Would You Rather Wednesday, Therapy Session Thursday, whatever it is, Wednesday through Friday, we have those specific segments. We don't have those Monday, Tuesday, so that would have made things even harder. So it was probably a good call for us to just say, we won't do the podcast today. We'll come back tomorrow and start fresh. So
yeah, and also, even if we did have time to squeeze it in, I was in Lebanon yesterday calling some softball for my other gig, Willard Lady Tigers, on willardtigers.net. And so, yeah, we've been out for the past 2 days. We're back here on a Thursday. A team that may be back in that playoff hunt now, and they're doing it again, Logan. They're doing me dirty. They're giving me just that little glimmer, that little light at the end of the tunnel, that little glimmer of hope, and that's the St. Louis Cardinals. Yesterday, playing a doubleheader and winning game 2 of that series, the afternoon game, by a final score of 5-4. Paul Goldschmidt single-handedly carried the offense to a win. Pitching was outstanding, even though they gave up 4 runs. The relief pitching, I should say, was outstanding. They won the afternoon game, and with that, they won the series 2 games out of 3. Well, Cincinnati is a very good offensive team, and you weren't going to keep them down for long in the second of the doubleheaders. They wallop the Cardinals 12-2. Pitching was bad from the word go. Jay Happ had his worst start as a Cardinal. Overall, the pitching was subpar, but I mean, the Reds are a good team, a good offensive team, but the fact that St. Louis took 2 out of 3 against him this past week now only sit 2.5 games back out of that second wildcard spot.
Yeah, J.A. Happ, like you mentioned, not good. He managed to get through the first inning. He allowed 2 runs in the first, which was not good, and then allowed 5 earned runs in the second inning without giving up a hit. I mean, he was removed from the game. He pitched 1 inning, even though he did pitch in the second inning, allowed 8 hits, 7 earned runs. And, I mean, it really, nobody really pitched particularly well for the Cardinals in that second game. You know, Fernandez gave up 2 earned runs in just a third of an innings pitched. Ponce de Leon gave up 2 earned runs in 1 1/3 innings. Now, I will say Whitley and Reyes both pitched well. Went 2 1/3 innings combined and only gave up 1 hit, no earned runs. Dixon gave up 1 earned run in an inning pitched. But it was one of those things. You're taking on Sonny Gray, who has been one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball in the last, I don't know, 5 years. He didn't pitch over the top well, but, you know, 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, 2 earned runs. Both of those hits were solo home runs and the runs that he gave up. So that wasn't great for him, but, you know, he pitched particularly well. And when you've got guys, I mean, legitimately, they were outscored by two guys by themselves. Nick Castellanos tripled the St. Louis Cardinals. He went 2-for-3 with, excuse me, 6 RBIs, including a grand slam. What are you going to do with that? Nick Castellanos has been so good all year. He's one of the best hitters in the National League, batting .319 this season. DeShields went 2-for-4 with two RBIs. It was sort of one of those games. It was a home run soiree for the Cincinnati Reds.
And they play in a home run friendly ballpark. Yeah. So
Castellanos hit 2, Suarez hit 1, Farmer hit 1. What are you going to do? You gave up 12 runs on 12 hits.
Yikes.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, not good. Not a good pitching performance from the St. Louis Cardinals. But like I said, the Reds are a very good offensive team. And really just the question that they've had the most of is their pitching. They didn't get consistent pitching out of their starters in this series. But, you know, if they're going to be a playoff team, they're going to have consistent pitching. That's how usually playoff teams are. They have a consistent starting rotation and timely hitting. And we see that with the Brewers, who are going to be in action against the Cardinals tomorrow. Those two will begin a 3-game series in Milwaukee. Adam Wainwright will get the start for the St. Louis Cardinals, Freddie Peralta for the Milwaukee Brewers. And I'm pretty sure it's a far-gone conclusion that Milwaukee's going to win the NL Central. But, you know, hey, if you get hot the right time, you know, I don't want to make this comparison because it's not there yet, because we, you know, comparing past things to events right now, it's hard to do. But back in 2011, when the Cardinals made their run, they had a lot of matchups against the Brewers. And at the time, the Brewers were the best team in the NL Central. And circumstances were very, very similar. Now, the Cardinals were 10.5 games back of the wild card at that time. Right now, heading into today, which is September 2nd, they're only 2.5. But the Cardinals had a lot of matchups against the Brewers in September that year and won a lot of them to get to the playoffs. And the same scenario is going to go on here. They're facing Milwaukee 10 times this month, starting with 3 this weekend. You know, if you're going to show that you're contenders and not pretenders, Logan, you got to beat these teams. And the Cardinals are going to be facing a lot of good teams here in September.
Yeah, and, you know, you get off with Flaherty being injured once again, and I think he's still on the DL.
Yes.
If I remember correctly.
IL, yeah, DL.
Yeah, IL, DL, whatever it is nowadays. So he's not out for the rest of the year. He could come back fairly quickly, but he's currently out, so, and he's missed most of the year. So your best pitcher is who you've got going on the bump tonight to open up this series against the Brewers, which is sort of what you want, right? If you want to open up a big series against a great team, having your de facto ace on the mound to start the series, sort of kick things off, always helps. And Adam Wainwright's going tonight for the Cardinals. I want to move past this Brewers series coming up starting tonight, though. And some news that I've heard around the Cardinals' next series, which is against the Dodgers, in St. Louis.
Ooh.
Have you heard? So, of course, there's a player for the Los Angeles Dodgers that is, you say this a lot, you know, former Cardinals legend.
He is an actual legend.
There is an actual Cardinals legend showing up for just the second time since he left St. Louis in 2012. And that is Albert Pujols, coming back to St. Louis, playing in this 4-game series against the Dodgers. And the Cardinals are doing a really cool thing in this series. They're selling tickets, certain tickets, I would say probably like nosebleed seats, second or third level seats, for $5.55 in honor of Albert Pujols. Also a way to get more people to the game. But I think that's a really cool thing.
And a sign of desperation.
But it's the second time in a decade that Albert Pujols is coming back to St. Louis to play in a series. And no, he's not the Albert Pujols of years past, but it's really cool to see him back in St. Louis. It's a big series against the Dodgers. Theoretically, you're probably not going to catch the Dodgers in the wild card race. They have got that an absolute lock on that first playoff. Or actually, no, they don't have a lock on that wild card spot
because for the first time since April,
they are the NL West division leaders. So now it's the Giants that have a stranglehold on that. But I think that's really cool to see you able to honor a former player like that in your franchise's history. And You know, it's one of those things that it's another really big series. If you're the Cardinals, you kind of have to hope that you split it. You know, one of those things. This series against the Brewers, though, is huge. You're right. Wainwright, Kim, and Lester are the projected starters for the three games in that series, going up against Peralta, Hauser, and Burns. So it's going to be tough. This Brewers team has one of the best, if not the best, pitching rotation in the National League. I mean, it has been so good this year. If you can take two out of three against this Brewers team and split the series against the Dodgers 2-2, then you're running into three straight absolutely massive series. A three-game set against the Reds, a three-game set at New York against the Mets, and then a three-game series at home against the San Diego Padres. So this is, in my opinion, starting tonight, September 3rd through September 19th, might be the biggest stretch, the biggest 16-day stretch of the Cardinals' entire season. And you get the majority of those games at home. The Brewers are at Milwaukee. The Mets are, of course, at New York. In New York. But you've got 4-game series against the Dodgers at home, 3-game series against the Reds at home, and a 3-game series against the Padres at home. So 10 of those 16 games are in St. Louis. That's pretty big. And I would urge Cardinals fans, you yourself, Matt, as a Cardinals fan, try to get to these games.
Oh, I will.
These are going to be, more than, in my opinion, the most important games of the season for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, and you talk about that stretch. Yeah, 4 against the Dodgers, who are a contender, obviously, now in the NL West, though they could possibly slip because, you know, that's been a two-horse race thus far in the NL West, the Dodgers and the Giants. One of them could slip, and whoever does slip is going to get, nice voice crack there, one of them that does slip is going to get that NL wild card spot. And then that second wild card spot is completely up for grabs between, I'd say, what would it be now, three or four teams. The Reds, the Padres, the Cardinals, and the Phillies. So, yeah, 4 teams. Well, Cardinals don't play the Phillies anymore this season. They had a head-to-head series, a couple of them, way back when, early in the season. And I'm pretty sure the Phillies won that season series. But the 3 games against the Padres and the next 3 games against the Reds, I feel like in that month of September, in that middle half, is going to decide if the Cardinals are going to get that wild card spot or not. Because you're gaining a lot of ground there if you win those games. And you brought up a very good point, Logan. These games are going to be at home. And usually you play your best baseball in front of the home fans. So now is the best time for the Cardinals right now to play their best baseball in front of the best fans in baseball and get back to the postseason, get a shot at the postseason. Because after that, they play some matchups with the Brewers and then the Cubs to end the season, in which, you know, those are kind of throwaways. Because like I said, the Brewers, are going to win the NL Central more than likely, and the Cubs are the Cubs. They're completely gutted. They're playing a lot of rookies, a lot of newer guys, because they trade off their main assets in Baez, Rizzo and Bryant. Can't think of his third name. So, 100% agree with you, dude. Next 2 weeks for St. Louis Cardinals are going to decide if they're going to be in the postseason or not. A team that is not particularly, and I'm being nice about it, in postseason contention right now is the other team west on I-70, and that's the Kansas City Royals. They were in action last night against the Cleveland Indians/Guardians. They'll be the Indians for one more year, and then we'll be the Guardians next year and from there on out. In a good ball game, nonetheless, it went 11 innings, but in favor of the Indians, 5-3. Previous to that game, 2 days ago, they lost 7-2, and it felt like it was Ahmed Rosario versus the Kansas City Royals in that game. Dude had 5 RBIs, 5 hits. So Royals are having a tough time right now against the Tribe in Kansas City.
Yeah, and, you know, that comes with the fact that Cleveland is the better team. I was supremely frustrated last night, as were a lot of Royals fans, when it came to the top of the bottom of the 10th inning, I should say.
Okay.
In which, of course, runner starts. You have a start out with a runner on second base. The Royals managed to load the bases in the bottom of the 10th inning with nobody out. Didn't generate a run. Bases loaded with nobody out, and you could not get a run in. None. Including the fact that you got the bases loaded with nobody out, and who was up to bat with the bases loaded and nobody out?
Salvador Perez.
It was Salvador Perez. Which, no, I'm not going to go at Salvi's neck because he's been one of the best players in Major League Baseball this year. But that in and of itself was pretty frustrating. You know, one positive you can take away if you are a Royals fan, a couple of things, actually. Jackson Cower was pretty good last night. He went six innings, allowed two runs. However, neither of those were earned runs. Struck out six. Irvin Santana ended up getting the loss. He went in that bottom of the 11th inning, or top of the 11th inning. He went one innings pitched, allowed two runs, one of them earned. Struck out one. But, yeah, Michael Taylor with an error that allowed a run or two. That really hurt the Royals in this one, to be honest. That was what allowed those runs when Cower was pitching. However, they didn't fall as earned runs. With Zimmer and Ramirez both scoring on that error in the top of the fifth, that really hurt the Royals' chances in this one. But Cower pitched well, aside from that error given up by Michael Taylor that allowed two runs. And then, once again, he's back. Adalberto Mondesi, he's back. He was in the lineup last night. He was DHing, right? They're trying to slowly work him because, Dayton Moore and Mike Matheny both made statements about this. They're very happy with what's going on in that middle infield right now. I mean, how can you not be? Whit Merrifield batting 280, Nicky Lopez batting 292, fielding out of his freaking mind. Both of those guys went 1-for-4 last night with a walk. Literally, those two had the exact same stat line. Both of them 1-for-4, both of them with a walk. However, Whit Merrifield scored a run. Nicky Lopez didn't. That is what it is.
So not totally exact.
Not totally exact. Both of their hits were singles, but they both played well. Adalberto Mondesi did the exact same thing. He was 2-for-5 on the night. He was 2-for-5 with an RBI. Two runs scored. However, if you're Adalberto Mondesi, he either hit the ball in play and got on, or he struck out. He was 2-for-5 with three strikeouts. So he either got on with a hit or he struck out. Now, I do want to show you a statistic that I found absolutely mind-boggling about Whitmer. First of all, about Nicky Lopez.
Boggle my mind, please.
This will boggle in terms of batting average, and I never thought I would say this. Since June 15th, the players with the best batting average in the majors.
I think I've seen this stat.
Since June 15th. Nicky Lopez is third in Major League Baseball in batting average since June 15th, batting .341. The only players with a higher batting average are Freddie Freeman at .349 and Trey Turner batting .350. Never thought I'd see the day. I really did not think I would ever see the day with Nicky Lopez where he was top three in batting average at any point. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to see that sort of thing from a guy like Nicky Lopez, which most people said throughout his career, like, oh, yeah, he's a great fielder, you know, but he's never going to be a tremendous batter, right? He's never going to be great in terms of getting on base. His on-base percentage has always been halfway decent, around .300. But, I mean, this season, .363 on-base percentage, .292 batting average. You know, it's one of those things. To prove that he's really not at all a power hitter, his on-base percentage and his slugging are the exact same. Both of them at .363. Versus, like, Salvador Perez, whose slugging is a .536. In a limited supply, Adalberto Mondesi's slugging is .854. And that was the other stat I wanted to point out. Adalberto Mondesi is second in Major League Baseball since 2018 in games with a stolen base and a home run. He's got 15 games since 2018 in which he has had a stolen base and a home run in the exact same game. When he's healthy, Adalberto Mondesi is elite. However, he has trouble staying healthy. And hopefully that's something that can get fixed sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure in MLB The Show, and I know this is a completely irrelevant statement, but it is regards to Mondesi. Dude would have cards where he would have high power, like for one side, mostly lefties, and 99 speed as a switch hitter. That's game-changing. And that's the reason why the Royals are so highly touted with this prospect, Adalberto Mondesi, because he can be that guy who can steal. He can be a 30-30 player. Even his ceiling would be a 40-40 player. Kind of like how Ronald Acuna is for Atlanta or Mike Trout was for the Angels. So, yeah, a lot to look forward to. Actually, today on the Sports Reporters with Ned Reynolds, I was producing it, and we talked with Royals analyst Joel Goldberg. And he talked about, you know, the infield that the Royals would possibly have, like saying, you know, it being like maybe Mondesi or Lopez at third, though he didn't like the idea of Mondesi being at third. He'd rather him just.
That's what they've been saying. Dayton Moore and Mike Matheny have mentioned eventually, once they realize Mondesi is completely healthy, moving him to third and leaving Nicky Lopez at shortstop, Witt at second.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great idea.
Yeah, but he, in his opinion, just thought it'd be better if Lopez would play third and Mondesi would play short and then have Merrifield at second and then, you know, either put Bobby Witt Jr. either in second or in center field or just swap, you know, Whit Merrifield and Bobby Witt. I know that's
right.
That's not hard to get confused by, and I'm saying
from,
that sarcastic.
From what I've seen, Mondesi has the stronger arm
okay.
than Nicky Lopez does.
So playing him at third would be ideal.
So I would say probably Mondesi at the hot corner because of his arm strength. But yeah, like I mentioned, the most games with a home run and a stolen base in Royals history, okay? Number one is Carlos Beltran with 25 games. Amos Otis is second with 21. George Brett third with 16. Adalberto Mondesi in fourth with 15. Since 2018, the most games with a home run and stolen base in the major leagues. Christian Yelich in first with 16. Adalberto Mondesi second with 14.
That's insane.
He's elite when he's healthy. It's just, can he stay healthy? I mean, his health has been an issue, of course, among other things, such as, you know, the suspension that he had a few years ago for the steroid use.
PEDs, yeah.
But, I mean, man, when he's healthy, he has been good. And I mean really good this year. He's only had 41 at-bats this season. Batting .366 with 5 home runs and 10 RBIs.
He's a game changer. Like, with the speed, his power, he's a 5-tool guy. And he can be a franchise player if he can just stay healthy.
And he's only 26.
Exactly.
So to just give up on Adalberto Mondesi, to me, doesn't make much sense. Despite the health concerns and his inability to stay durable, he's got so much talent, and at 26 years old, you know, things could change. He's still young enough. I mean, he's still working into his prime years. You know, they say that like 27 to 31 is your prime. So if that's the case with Adalberto Mondesi, he's not even there yet. You're seeing glimpses of it with what he's been able to do in limited time this season. So don't give up on a guy like this with this much talent just yet, because if he can get healthy, with everything else that the Royals have going for them, Salvador Perez having the best hitting season from a catcher since Pudge Rodriguez in the late 90s, in terms of power, you're seeing Nicky Lopez turn into a legitimate everyday all-star caliber middle infielder. You know Whit Merrifield is an all-star caliber middle infielder. The young pitching is showing flashes with Daniel Lynch, Brady Singer, Jackson Coar, Brad Keller. You've got young guys in the minor league system, MJ Melendez, Bobby Witt, Nick Prado, Asa Lacy, Eric Pena, Kyle Isbell. I mean, the list goes on and on. You've got so much going for you right now if you are the Royals, and if you're a Royals fan, don't give up on who could possibly be the most talented out of all those guys in Adalberto Mondesi. I would say Adalberto Mondesi and or Bobby Witt is probably the most talented guys in terms of like their potential of all those guys. Legitimately, those two have the most promise out of anybody on the Royals roster right now, whether that's MLB all the way down to freaking low A or rookie ball. It's those two guys. Don't give up on a guy like Adalberto Mondesi just yet.
You know, Royals fans, they are highly dedicated. I'll give them that. You know what's also a highly dedicated fan base. You know, I have to give a round of applause to those who are still Mets fans that are going on right now. Dude, it's such a train wreck over there in Flushing. First off, and we didn't allude to this on Tuesday on Sports Talk, but I wanted to, the whole thumbs down celebration that Javier Baez and Francisco Lindor started implementing, how they just like, you know, and fans have a right to do this, in my opinion, because they pay the tickets, they pay the bills for player salaries and everything else in between. They'll boo whenever a player is not performing well, especially in New York. Fans are, yeah, you rolled your eyes at that. Fans are just unforgiving.
They're impatient.
Impatient as well.
I mean, I'm very familiar with that. Like I've mentioned several times, I had a cousin who played for the New York Giants for seven seasons, and they won two Super Bowls. And fans would still be impatient when they'd lose a regular season game. It's like just chill out, okay? Like we know what this team has talent wise. We know who Eli Manning is. Just calm down. But that you lose one game or you lose a couple of games, and fans will write you off. They will become. They may have been your best friend 2 weeks ago. Now they're your worst enemy. And it's even worse in baseball because there's so many games that go on during the year. You know, you lose two or three straight games and the fans are at your neck. They are going at you on Twitter. And you're right. The fans do pay the bills. They buy the tickets. They have a right to have an opinion, right? If they want to boo, they want to do this and that and the other. Now, that you can chant and you can boo, but let's leave it at that. You know, when you start cursing at the players, when you start throwing things at the players, you know, when it gets to the point where you're throwing beers and stuff at the fans, I'm alluding to the documentary, the Netflix documentary that just came out. I don't know if you've seen it, The Malice at the Palace.
Oh, it came out already?
Yes, it's already out on Netflix. It's fantastic.
Okay, I'll have to give it a watch.
It's one of those things that it really opens your eyes to, you know, we were both very, very young when that happened. It was, 2005?
2005, 2006,
2005, 2006 when that happened, early in 2005. You know, I didn't really remember it very well. I remember hearing about it and, you know, talking about it. And, of course, I've seen, like, videos and stuff on YouTube about it. But the blame has always been sort of catered towards the players, towards, like, Ron Artest, Jermaine O'Neal, Ben Wallace, those guys. Right, Steven Jackson, another one. It's always sort of thrown at those guys. When you watch this documentary and you can see different, like, they have so many different viewpoints, so many different camera angles from this thing that a lot of places didn't see before, right? I've never seen a lot of these camera angles before. They're not on YouTube and things like that. This documentary really opens your eyes to the fans take a lot of the blame in this one, probably the majority of the blame.
Well, sure.
In this instance, they're throwing beer and food, and the fans are coming onto the court to try to fight the players. And it's like, you're really going to rush Ron Artest on the middle of an NBA floor and not expect to get knocked out?
Yeah.
Let's
be honest here.
You can get mad at Ron Artest all you want, but you're the idiot. Let's think about that for a minute. You're the moron that decided to run at a 6'8", 240-pound Ron Artest.
Who was a bruiser at that time.
Yeah, who might have been the baddest man in the NBA at that time. So, yes, I agree with you that the fans have a right to boo and chant and whatever it calls for, right? And be upset when things aren't going well. But then when things are going well, the players have a right to come right back at your neck. I am personally super okay with what these Mets players are doing. Javier Baez, Francisco Lindor. If you want to boo us, that's fine. But when I hit a bomb to left field, I'm going to boo you as I'm rounding second, going my 360 feet to come back and touch home plate. Or 270 feet, 90, 90, 90, 90, no, it's 360.
360, yeah.
Okay, I had it right. You know, when I do something well, and you've been booing me for seven innings, then I'm going to boo you back. I'm going to give you the thumbs down. Whatever, get over it.
I don't think you can do that as an athlete. I don't think you can because, like I said, the fans, they pay your paychecks. They're there, and they're entitled to their opinion. I'm not a fan of what Javier Baez did, though. It's Javier Baez-esque for him to do that, him being the outlandish player that he was with Chicago and now with the New York Mets. But and then moving on from that, just 20 hours ago, the Mets GM is now facing a DWI arrest. Ugh, this franchise. It's such a punchline.
It is something else, man. It is absolutely something else. And I'm curious, what does Francisco Lindor's contract look like?
Oh, I don't even want to know. That's
that man that, is
that'll give you something to boo about if you're a Mets fan.
That man is absolutely furious with himself. I would be so beyond upset if I was Francisco Lindor. Now, I will say he's making a ton of money. He signed a 10-year, $341 million deal.
Yeah, he secured the bag, that's for sure. And secured the bag while batting below, like, what, 220, 230? I don't have a stats pulled up here right off the top of my head, but he has really underperformed. And, you know, him and Javier Baez are obviously good friends, both natives, I believe, of Puerto Rico. And, you know, you think of that infield a couple of years ago of Lindor and Baez, you're thinking, wow, how can this team lose? Well, the Mets are 65 and 67 in the NL East. And this team should not be that bad. This team should be contending for the best record in all of baseball, at least from a hitting standpoint. Pitching-wise, I don't know. I know that Syndergaard is injured, DeGrom is injured. So there's your two main horses. But you're below 500 in the NL East? Whenever you got guys like Pete Alonso, Javier Baez, Francisco Lindor, you know, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo, Michael Conforto, that talented of a hitting core and you're two games below 500?
Yeah. Lindor's batting .221, despite the fact that he's making $43 million this year. Because his base salary is $22,300,000 and a signing bonus of $21 million.
My gosh.
$43,300,000.
And you expect me to not boo if I'm a Mets fan with that? Whew! Ouch.
I mean, that's fair. I agree with you. But at the end of the day, my thing is that these players, yes, they make a ton of money. Yes, these fans have an absolute right to be so invested and so excited about their team. These guys are still human beings.
Right.
At the end of the day.
That's true.
And yes, you can be upset and this and that and the other, but to be blatantly disrespectful at times, I have an issue with. You know, if you are a fan and you're at a game and you're like throwing stuff, and
that
whatever.
I'm not a fan of.
Yeah,
obviously.
Like at an NFL game or an NBA game, like what was it? It was this year, right? That a fan like dumped something on Russell Westbrook or something.
Yeah.
Or dumped like popcorn.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah. One threw a bottle of water at a Kyrie or whatever in a Celtics game. Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm Kyrie Irving and somebody throws a water bottle or something, yeah, like I'm gonna go into the stands and I'm gonna beat your brains out. That's disrespectful. What do you honestly believe gives you the right to do that? What did Kyrie Irving do to you that was so bad that you decided to physically assault another human being? Because that's what that is. You're going to throw something at, like the popcorn, okay, is not necessarily assault. That's just being a disrespectful human being, and you deserve to live alone for the rest of your days. Like, that's just not...
Like, straight up, yeah.
That is inhumane to do that. But to actually throw a water bottle or beer bottles or you know, whatever, you deserve to get punched in the mouth for that. It's straight up disrespectful to do something like that. And these guys are human beings at the end of the day. They're not just, they're not puppets. They're not clowns for you to toy around with for your own enjoyment. You know, they are as hard, you know, if you're upset about the way they're playing, I am willing to bet $1 billion they're upset by the way they're playing too. Okay, they understand that this is their livelihood. The majority of these guys love to play the game also. You know, it's about the money, yes, but it's also about the fact that these guys love this game. Okay, I don't believe, yes, LeBron James makes a lot of money, but LeBron James isn't LeBron James because of the money. He's LeBron James because he loves the game of basketball. Michael Jordan loves the game of basketball. Steph Curry, all these guys, Kobe, love the game of basketball. Javier Baez and Francisco Lindor love the game of baseball. They're just as upset as you are that they're not playing well. But you booing and throwing things at them or whatever else isn't helping. It's just not. I understand you being upset. But when it gets to a point where you're being blatantly disrespectful or physically assaulting players, you deserve everything bad in your life to happen to you, no matter what. If that's the kind of person you are. You want to boo? Fine. you want to voice your grievances out on Twitter or whatever, but when you're, like, threatening these people's families and stuff, like, I mean, you've seen some of that, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm not that good.
Players receiving death threats and this and that and the other, and it's like, it's really not that serious.
No,
dude.
Going that far, yeah, no.
Like, terrible. I'm as big a sports fan as anybody else, but actual death threats, racist epithets, things like that, you deserve every bit of negativity in your life to happen to you. I mean, just cut and dry. That's just the way it is.
Indeed. All right, let's move on from the negative.
That might have actually been my therapy session Thursday for
good.
The day.
I'm glad you did, because I don't have anything to talk about.
I didn't have anything either, but we got rolling on that, and I just
I actually have one thing that's kind of irking me, and we'll get to that here after we talk about college football, dude. Week one, it's finally here. We kind of had that week zero kind of thing where we had a couple of football games. We just got a little bitty sample last Saturday, but it's back in full swing starting tonight. Some games worth of note. Obviously, the big game of the night in the Big Ten, Ohio State versus Minnesota. Ohio State, of course, coming out as the fourth-ranked team in the FBS poll. They are 14-point favorites against Minnesota. Other ranked teams that are playing tonight, Coastal Carolina is playing Citadel, and Utah is playing Weber State. Coastal Carolina ranked 22, Utah ranked 24. And then in the nightcap, of course, playing out way out west, Arizona State, the 25th ranked team, will face Southern Utah. And Arizona State, a 45-point favorite there. But, you know, college football on Thursdays is back. And then when it comes Saturday, dude, oh, man. It'll be hard for me to be unglued from a TV, though. I will be unglued forcefully because I have college football myself to broadcast via SBU. But it's the most wonderful time of year. September, baby, where basically almost every sport is in action.
Yep. Saturday's going to be tough. I'm going to be simultaneously trying to watch football while moving into the new apartment. But, yeah, you mentioned sort of like the week zero thing that was last week. But, you know, I got fully invested due to the fact that my least favorite team in college football managed to lose to a really bad football team.
Oh, Nebraska.
Nebraska losing to Illinois made me so much more ready for college football to get underway. But you're right. We've got some great games tonight. Ohio State, Minnesota. As a Big Ten fan, that gets me really excited. I think Ohio State's going to win this game. I don't think there's much of an argument that can be made there.
Yeah, they're a 14-point favorite.
Minnesota's got some talent. But for me, Ohio State should win this game. Ohio State is who I want to win this game. Minnesota being in the Big Ten West with Iowa, you know, one of those teams that's going to be competing for that division championship. Like to see Ohio State win this one and lose all of their Big Ten East games so that in the event that Iowa does win the West, they don't have to play Ohio State. I don't see that happening. But, you know, one of those things.
One can dream.
Yeah, one can hope. Got a game on Friday, another ranked game on Friday, a 5 o'clock kickoff on a Friday, which is strange. North Carolina, who's preseason ranked number 10 in the country, taking on Virginia Tech. And then, like you said, we are in it.
North Carolina ranked number 10?
Get-go. North Carolina's ranked number 10, yeah.
You sure this isn't basketball season?
It is not, no. it is Mac Brown season in North Carolina, and that's why they're having a lot of success. Because horns down, they fired him like a bunch of morons. I'm sorry.
We just offended about...
Yeah, is
we offended
well,
any
here's the thing.
From Texas.
Here's the thing. The Big 12 comes out and says no more horns down, and then the Texas decides to leave the Big 12. So are we cool with horns down now? I feel like the Big 12 should go out and reverse that and be like, hey, we'll actually pay you guys to do horns down. Like, that's how upset we are with Texas right now. Do horns down, you know.
With the new NIL rights, the Big 12 will implement $100 to every player that gives the horns
gives
down
the
symbol.
Horns down. Yeah. I'm literally going to be like mid-play doing horns down if that were the case.
If I heard that deal, I'd say immediately, where do I sign my check?
Yeah, where?
Yeah.
Where's it at?
Make it a defensive call for like a formation on the sideline. There you go.
Man, oh man. And then just have the PA guy at every other Big 12 stadium here, like boomer sooner. Just extend that boo out. I don't know what the insult could be for Oklahoma, you know, but horns down is just so blatantly good. But some great games going on Saturday. Big ranked games. Top 25 matchups in the Big Ten. We got an 11 a.m. kickoff, number 19, Penn State against Wisconsin in Camp Randall. 19 versus 12, a huge game. And then another big game right after that, number 17, Indiana at number 18, Iowa in Kinnick. Going to be a good one, 2:30 kickoff. Man, I can't wait for that one, let me tell you.
Also, 2:30, Iowa facing off against Indiana, 18 versus 17.
That's what
17?
I just said, yeah.
Oh, did you? My bad.
Yep. That's a big one. 3:30 kickoff, Iowa State ranked number 7, an in-state game going against Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa almost beat Iowa State last year. Northern Iowa's a good team, good FCS team. They've given Iowa a run for their money a few times as well. So that would thoroughly make my day is if Northern Iowa was able to beat Iowa State, and that would maybe quiet down some of the Cyclone fans that are so supremely excited. Oklahoma plays Tulane. Fresno State traveling to Eugene to play number 11, Oregon. Alabama, Miami.
That's
going to
be
a really good one. 2:30 kickoff in Atlanta. Neutral site game, you know. Like I said, Alabama number 1, Miami number 14. Miami is technically the home team in that one, but it's a neutral site, so yeah. Who really cares? Alabama fans always travel well, so it definitely will be more of a neutral site game. Cincinnati has a home matchup. They're the number 8 team in the country, playing Miami of Ohio.
23-point favorites.
Yep, 23-point favorites in that one. And then we have another ranked matchup, which I would say I disagree with either of these teams being ranked, but, you know, one of those things.
It is what it is.
The number 23rd ranked Louisiana Raging Cajuns traveling to Memorial Stadium to take on the University of Texas, horns down. Number 21 team in the country. 3:30 kickoff in that one. San Jose State traveling to L.A. to take on USC. And then the game of the week. Number 5 Georgia taking on number 3 Clemson. Neutral site game in Charlotte. 6:30 kickoff. Nightcap. Going to be such a good game to really close out the strength of week one here. And then, you know, we've got some other good ones. LSU, who's number 16 in the country, is taking on UCLA at Rose Bowl Stadium in Pasadena. And then Notre Dame, Florida State on Sunday. A Sunday game, 6:30 p.m. Of course, with the NFL season not kicking off this Sunday, you got a Sunday football game. Florida State is unranked, Notre Dame at number 9. That one, however, is in Tallahassee at Doak Campbell. So, let me tell you, again, cannot wait to get some real college football started. Now, that will quickly change if Iowa manages to lose to Indiana on Saturday, that I will quickly no longer be excited. That will ruin my entire weekend. However, I won't take to Twitter and start saying a bunch of outlandish crap.
Yeah, calling for Eli Drinkwitz's family to, you know, be shot or just crazy stuff like that, or calling out the players. Nah,
I don't like Mizzou, but no, I wouldn't do
well,
that.
Well, I mean, we're in a Springfield market. You're either like Missouri State or Mizzou, and which, by the way, Missouri State will play Oklahoma State on Saturday, and of course, it came out earlier this week, the Oklahoma State head coach saying that Missouri State's one of the more talented teams, actually the most talented team that he's had to face. So, looking forward to that matchup. Looking to see how the Bears will do. But yeah, and we'll go over it in more detail tomorrow. We'll go over, of course, the Minnesota Ohio State matchup, and of course the other games that are going on tonight. All right, are you gonna put that rant of you calling out players on Twitter and Facebook or whatever your therapy session Thursday? You can officially call it that, or you got something else?
I would say that's it. You know. I can't really think of anything else off the top of my head. I've been thinking about it all morning, but we got into that, and it does. It irks me. If you are one of those people that you want to go at the players, and I understand that you get to be frustrated. I understand that these guys make more money in a week than a lot of us make in a year. I understand that, okay? Believe me, I know. We work in radio. We know. But at the end of the day, you have to be cognitively aware enough to understand that they are human beings. Okay? These are people that, yes, they make a lot of money. But they're still...
that we pay to them.
Right, but they're still people.
Right.
And they make a lot of money because they're really good at what they do. And they're really good at what they do, and what they do is a billions of dollars worth of you know, content. That's what, I mean, theoretically, you could say these guys are content creators. I mean, really, like...
That's true.
athletes...
That's one way to put it, but yeah, it's
athletes,
true.
Athletes, musicians, actors, these guys are content creators. And athletes might be... athletes create better content than maybe anything else on the planet. So... yeah, you can be upset. Yeah, you can voice your grievances. But when it reaches a point where you are being verbally demeaning or physically abusive towards players, they don't deserve that.
No.
Regardless of how much money they make, they don't deserve to be treated that way because they're doing what they do because they love this game and they love to entertain you. And they're doing the best they can. And sometimes their best just isn't good enough. Sometimes, you know, things just don't roll their way. Sometimes the basket looks really small, you know. Sometimes the football has a little bit of butter on it. I don't know. You know, sometimes that baseball looks really small coming in. People struggle, okay? Anybody who's played sports at any level understands that. Sometimes you just struggle. Sometimes you struggle on the field. Sometimes you struggle on the court. It just happens.
That's just not just sports. That's just life in general.
You know, and sometimes it can multiply. Sometimes it can stack upon itself and really get you dug down deep in a hole. And that's what we're seeing from the Mets right now with Javier Baez, Francisco Lindor. Sometimes things really just don't go your way and you have really bad years. But you know the talent's there. You know how talented Javier Baez is. You know how talented Francisco Lindor is. It could change. It could change in a heartbeat. But the fact that there is this much animosity between the Mets fan base, the Mets front office and ownership, and the players, I don't expect it to change. I mean, they may continue to struggle because they have no backing whatsoever. The only guys that believe in this Mets team are the guys in the dugout. That's it. The owner has no faith in this team. The owner is talking crap
on Twitter
about his players on Twitter. Well, maybe you should start talking crap about your GM, who's being an absolute moron and getting drunk and driving home. Maybe you should talk some crap to that guy. Maybe you should go at that guy on Twitter because he's the one being an idiot right now. Your team is trying to win you ball games, make the playoffs, make you money. That's the thing. You want to go at the players on Twitter. You want to say the players are doing this, the players are doing that. Go at the owner. Yeah, the players might be making $20 million, but the owner's making $100. Okay, the owner is the one making the most money out of this deal. Go at him. Because he's not doing near enough. He's giving no support to his players whatsoever. And he has been a joke of an owner for a very, very long time. Mets fans have been calling for his head for years. For him to sell the franchise, for him to do this and that and the other. And he's done a piss poor job. He really has.
This is Therapy Session Thursday on ESPN The Jock. No, that's good, bro. Let it all out. Let air out the grievances. This is a safe space here inside the Jock studio. I really don't have anything that's like pissing me off or just like making me really angry. But something that's now annoying to me, I'm an avid sports watcher, obviously, and I like going to a lot of sporting events. And right now, I'm looking at tickets for a Royals game that I may go to, I may not go to, tonight, be it the Cleveland Indians. They're playing, of course, tonight at 7:10, Game 3. Indians have won the first two. The Royals will look to salvage a game tonight. SeatGeek is one of the more popular ticket websites that I have been a part of, and they offer good deals. They really do. And most ticket places do. StubHub, SeatGeek, Vivid Seats, Ticketmaster, whatever. Usually offer the best seats. But for so long, and I know this is going to sound like a boomer take, but for so long, it's been so easy to navigate throughout SeatGeek because you folks can't see it, but you can see it here on my screen. You could pick out a location, and it'll show up with like a separate screen off to the side about where you're going to be sitting, your ticket, and how much it's going to cost. Well, now whenever you load up the map, the part of the map of the stadium is now blocked by deals that I don't want. No, SeatGeek, I don't want a $4 seat in section 427 at Kauffman Stadium. I don't want to be sitting in the nosebleeds. I want to be sitting near the dugouts for 20 or 30 bucks. Yet when I do that, it'll pull up another screen in which it blocks the field view of where I'm at. Like, why are you changing? Why? I know change is good, but not this one. And I know it's a boomer take. I get it. Most people don't like change, myself included. But why did you have to do this? I don't understand. Because like I said, and I'm showing my partner here, Logan, obviously folks can just take my word for it. If you want to see it for yourself, check out SeatGeek.com. We don't have like a promo code or whatever, not yet at least, to get $20 off your ticket purchase or whatever. But I'm trying to go back and look at these seats, yet part of the map is blocked. And then whenever I don't click on a seat, it's wanting me to get seats for like $4 up in section 437, row K, and for like $4. Come on. Give me a break.
It's tough.
I know. First world problems, worrying about worrying about a ticket map layout on a ticket website. But
fair.
But no, like I don't want to see these listings. I don't want to see it. I just want to see the full map and make my decision there. We're so petty. Or at least I am. First world problems. But it'd be like that sometimes on the Therapy Session Thursday portion of our podcast. And usually we end it with Therapy Session Thursday, so I don't think we should change from that path now. This has been a good podcast. I've enjoyed it. I always do, of course. Friday, we'll be back with you. Of course, Friday will be the Funky Headlines Friday. But of course, also on Friday, we're going to be in action in the sports broadcasting realm. Logan, where are you going tomorrow?
I will be in town. I'm going to Springfield Catholic to call a game with the legend, Ned Reynolds. Him and I are calling Springfield Catholic McDonald County. Should be a good one. You know, Springfield Catholic has some talent. You know, first and foremost with Springfield Catholic, you got to start with Liam O'Reilly. You know, big receiver, 6'1", 6'2", about 180 pounds. He's a Missouri State commit for football. So he's a great receiver. Springfield Catholic, a team that had issues last year. Like I said, lost their first three games of the year, then had three games canceled because of COVID. And, you know, the predictions for their year this year are not great. They kind of got manhandled in their first game of the year playing against Lamar, who has been, along with, you know, Valley Catholic and Webb City and Maryville High School up in northern Missouri, sort of one of those four or five just absolute powers in high school football in the state of Missouri, winning numerous state championships. I think they have won 8, including beating yours truly in my alma mater, Lawson High School.
Ouch.
My sophomore year in the state championship. They beat us 41-0.
Big ouch.
Well, you know, it was one of those things. They were 40. They needed to score 49 points to break the United States record for points scored by a high school team in a season. And so, I mean, we got a slight win, you know.
We didn't win the game,
but we didn't allow them to score 49 on us.
That close to a record.
We were well aware of what it was, and you know, it was one of those things. We were down 7-0 at the end of the first quarter, and we thought we were playing really well. Well, then it was 28-0 at the end of the first half, and it was one of those things. And their offense was freaking wild. They ran 2 quarterback sets. They literally had 2 guys. They had a running quarterback and a passing quarterback, and they would sort of stand in between the center. So if the center was lined up in his spot, the 2 quarterbacks would stand sort of parallel to the center. One like standing behind one behind the left guard, one behind the right guard, and the center, depending on what play it was. Right, if it was a run play, he'd snap it to the running quarterback. If it was a pass play, to the passing quarterback. It was wild, and it was completely, like, there was no way to really understand it. And playing scout offense that week leading up to state might have been one of the most, like, might have been close to the most fun I ever had playing high school football. It was so much fun to do that week. But one of those, I mean, and they got thrashed 46-0. Springfield Catholic did. So they're looking for a better performance. McDonald County is a pretty talented team as well. So looking forward to that one. You yourself, where is Willard? Are they at home?
Well, first off, even though it may not be a good performance, I know you will have a great performance yourself on the broadcast with Ned Reynolds. And like you said, he's a Springfield area, a local legend here, so you'll have fun with that. I will be in Willard, first game at the home stomping grounds. It'll be against Republic, and that is probably Willard's biggest rival. Not as big as a rivalry as, say, like in town, Ozark versus Nixa, or, you know, a couple of Springfield public schools going at it, like, say, Glendale and Kickapoo. But it's a rivalry nonetheless, and I'm looking forward to it. Willard's going to look to bounce back, lost 39-13 to a really good Carl Junction team. And, you know, it's been really interesting to see and watch the new offense, from Frank Tristan, see some new faces in that lineup, and looking forward to calling some Friday night lights here tomorrow night. Of course, your game won't be on the Jock stations. It'll be on 560 KWTO.
That is correct.
Because Springfield Cardinals have preceding rights over the Jock airwaves for their games. Their season will end in about a couple weeks here. Actually, it'll end next week, next Sunday, I believe.
2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks from this upcoming Sunday.
I think so. September 19th, I want to say,
okay,
is their final game. I can, you know, quickly pull up the schedules here on my phone. God bless.
Yeah, God bless the internet and Steve service. Jobs.
Yep, September 19th. Sunday, September 19th is their last game. That'll be the end of a six-game series against the Northwest Arkansas Naturals. A 2:05 first pitch, September 19th. That'll be their final game of the season. So, 17 days out. And before we close out, just want to give a big shout-out to two very special people. Today,
Casey and Mahomes?
Nope.
Ah.
Today is, like I said, September 2nd. On this day, 7 years ago, I worked up the nerve to ask out a girl that I really, really liked. That girl is now my fiance. So, Maggie, happy 7-year anniversary. I love you. And then the second person who might, to be completely honest with you, aside from her, be my second favorite human being on the planet. Maybe third behind my mama. I don't know. It's hard to put those people in order, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
On this day 6 years ago, so Maggie and I's 1-year anniversary, Maggie's niece was born. Our niece, of course, Cambry. She's now 6 years old. She's in school today. You know, she's in her first week of kindergarten. So her first full week of kindergarten, so she's at school today, I'm sure, enjoying herself, eating lunch right about now. So happy birthday, Cambry, 6 years old. I love you as well. So big shout out to two of my favorite people on the planet. Just I had to do that before we closed out today.
Of course. Hoping Cambry is enjoying her lunch with her friends there at whatever elementary school she's at. You said she's in kindergarten?
Kindergartner at Southwest Elementary.
There you go. There you go. All right, that'll about do it here for this edition of the Rookie Sports Report Podcast. Matthew Rizzo alongside Logan Weber. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Ball game!